This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by the Parent House. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, it's always a pleasure to get on, and we are here in Salem and live.
And talk about how the first day went and what things happened on Monday.
So we're getting organized. As you know, we get together for legislative days periodically for 3 or 4 days every couple of months, and then that leads into a short session in the even year of 35 days or less, or the longer session in the odd year. So we are in the beginnings week of the short session, which is a session that is designed and approved by the voters to do adjustments in our budget and technical changes. And so the tone, it's interesting, we do some kind of procedural stuff that normally doesn't get anybody's attention. But one of the things that our leadership team had asked for, and normally we get a few adjustments in the rules when we set up, you know, any parliamentary procedures, there's rules. And one of the rules that we have is when it's getting close to the end of session, which happens very, very quickly in a short session, there's something called post and go, meaning that the chairs that run these committees, and last time we talked about there's actually 30 House committees and Senate, if you combine them, about 15 apiece on policy. So the chairs can post something, and when it's close to sine die or when it's close to ending the session, there's a 1 hour notice. And we've always been concerned about that. So the current leadership on the Republican side of the House asked for a change in that. What we asked for was 4 hours notice. Literally, some of these bills are more than 100 and up to a couple of hundred pages. And if you get an amendment on a large bill, and have an hour, you literally can't read that amendment within an hour. I mean, it takes a couple of minutes to read a page, and you can do that math. And so we asked for 4 hours notice. We weren't given that. And so where most people, these rules are unanimous, we actually had some no votes on it. So it kind of sets the tenor a little bit.
And what is the tone right now going into it? It seemed like tensions were already ramping up.
So there is some tension. There's some nervousness in the building. The committees are moving along smoothly in the stuff that I'm in policy and healthcare. I'm in healthcare policy, behavioral mental health policy. I serve as vice chairs of both of those. I'm also on a sub natural resources committee where we're hearing information coming in, talking a lot about water and things like that. So that routine stuff is going smoothly, moving forward in the committees that I'm in. The rules for those particular committees have been adopted in most cases for those committees that have met. But the buzz in the building is tomorrow is a big day for this building. This is something that's been set up by the Timber Unity entity, which came out of last year, 2019's cap and trade bill, or cap and invest, however you want to term that. But it's the carbon bill. And so tomorrow there's a rally. There is about 250 trucks, if I have those numbers correct, in the 2019 session. And ODOT, or Oregon Department of Transportation, is warning that there may be up to 1,000 trucks on the road. That is an awful lot of trucks to converge into the Salem area. And so there's some, kind of a buzz around the building. What's going to happen tomorrow with this event?
And what happens in terms of the event taking place while you're having meetings and in session and things like that? Do lawmakers who want to be part of it come and go, or how do you think it's going to work?
Well, the event organizers are working with, have put forward agenda that's working with our leadership. And so we have, there is some coordination with that. Now, the event, the Timber Unity event for tomorrow is planned basically all day long. The trucks, like in Douglas County, are going to gather about 3:15 at the Douglas County Fairgrounds. We're going to have trucks coming down down I-84. We're going to have trucks coming from the coast. There's going to be trucks coming from all over, starting in the wee hours of the morning where these people normally start their work days anyway. So that's not unusual. But as they get to Salem, we're hoping to get them in, and there's been parking arranged for them at the fairgrounds here, parking lots arranged. So it is coordinated, and they did it very smoothly with 200 or 300 trucks last time. So they've prepared for that. And at 10 o'clock, that will the ceremony, kind of the speeches, will kick off. And then any lawmaker from either party has been invited to come talk for a short period of time. And then there is an agenda, like I've been asked to come to receive one of the awards that they're handing out. They're handing out a few awards to lawmakers, and this is a Conviction of Courage Award, you know, for those folks here in the legislature that have kind of stood up and come from districts that this would really impact and we feel would hurt.
So what are you hearing from your colleagues across the aisle about tomorrow's event?
Nervousness. Some of the talk is in the hallway. Are you spending the night here? Did you get a hotel room or spend the night? Because most of my colleagues across the aisle, of course, were close enough to Portland that they drive every day. And most of the Republicans actually come and have some sort of housing arrangements here because we come from the rural parts of the state to where it's, you know, a big commitment to come to the legislature and stay there. Now, I'm on the cusp of that, so I drive about an hour 15 to an hour and a half each way each day to do that. So I'll be leaving a little bit before 5 a.m. to try and get in before that. So there's talks about will we be able to get to the building. And then they've also reduced our floor schedule. Rather than having the regular business of it, we will have a floor, but it will be more of a gavel in, gavel out, and allow folks to get out to that rally.
And with the 35 days constitutionally mandated, no wiggle room, then this issue of cap and trade and this event tomorrow, all of this taking time from a whole lot of other routine things. What happens if, you get to a point there at day 35 and there are a whole lot of things left to be done? What happens then?
Well, the sine die is constitutional, and so, you know, the session has to end, and if the session ends, then any bills or legislation that hadn't made it through it. And of course, we have timelines now. We have a couple of weeks. We have the deadline coming up on February 13th. So any of the bills that we're hearing this week, if we don't have them in a work session by Friday or Thursday of this week, by tomorrow, and if we don't pass them out by the 13th of next week, then in theory, those bills are dead, although there's ways to move those to some committees like revenue where they can continue on and nothing's actually done until sine die. But there are procedures that the governor has to call a special session if she chose to do that.
And do you think that is likely, or is it too early to tell?
Too early to tell. Special sessions do get called. We certainly have had them, you know, just in the history here in Salem. But I don't think they get called too lightly. It is a financial commitment to taxpayers to call that. And I think we should be able to get our work done within the time frame that we have. And the problem is with bills like the cap and invest or cap and trade, this short session was not designed to do that. And so what's happening is basically things that didn't get passed through in the long session of the odd year, like 2019 is when we had a long session, this idea didn't get through. So they're using this short session basically to clean up or come back with bills that didn't have the support to get through in the 2019 to in the short session now, which really wasn't the design of it. So there's really not time to do that.
All right, going to take a break on Inside Douglas County. More with State Representative Cedric Hayden when we come back. The interview, a podcast after one at 541radio.com, 1245. Inside Douglas County, from News Radio 1240, KQEN. Yeah. Inside Douglas County, 1247. Lars Larson coming at 1. Tomorrow's program, also live from Salem, we'll be talking with State Representative Gary Leaf while the Timber Unity Rally is going on. We'll get a check-in with him and sort of play-by-play, if you will, as to what's happening in Salem during the noon hour. Today from Salem, State Representative Cedric Hayden talked a lot about the event tomorrow and the beginning of the session. Let's switch gears, talk about some of the specific things that you're attempting to see happen during the session.
Sure, yeah. So, you know, people ask me, well, what do you do? You know, you're in session for 35 days. What do you do the rest of the year? And what do we do in the interim? So what we do is we work on subjects within the committees that we've been assigned to for the most part. I do have a couple of chief-sponsored bills that I'm working on. We each get two bills in the House side, and you know, they oftentimes are technical. So I am working on a integration of oral and mental health bill, and this is something that I'm working with the Oregon Community Foundation on to get better access, particularly in oral health, to some of the children that have. We have about 10% of children in Oregon that have coverage, but they still don't have oral health resources to them. So that is a bill that I worked a lot on in the interim, many meetings, working with coordinated care organizations, dental organizations, schools, Oregon Health Authority, and the Oregon Community Foundation. And so, you know, we call those stakeholders or people that would be involved with that. So we spent months working on that bill, and it did get a hearing yesterday, and it is scheduled today for a vote. And I am hearing good things that it looks like that was one of my priority bills is going to get a approval vote and keep moving through the building. The other one that I'm working on is a reflection of what I'm hearing in the housing crisis, not only from my district, and I'm hearing a lot of that since we've dropped the bill. We're getting a lot of calls and emails from across the entire state, and this would be a senior property tax freeze, meaning if you are a senior on fixed income and you needed to stay in your house, but you're getting priced out by taxes being increased around you, it wouldn't eliminate the tax, but it would just say you could apply for a property tax freeze to where you wouldn't get priced out of your house. And so there's actually, this is my second attempt to do it. We're working on that. I do have some folks across the aisle that are quietly talking with me about it. So we did get it referred to a committee. That's further than I got last time. So we'll see. And this is a attempt to help with the housing crisis, particularly in seniors. That is a significant issue. Working on a couple other things that I'm chief sponsor on, but since we only get two bills, then we'll join and work on a bill with another legislator. So I'm working on some nurse staffing issues with my vice chair up here and hospitals to get some appropriate language around some bills that we've done with nurse staffing. Again, kind of a technical one. And then a big one, I mentioned I was a vice chair of the new Mental Health Behavioral Health Committee, working with Representative Greenlick, who's the chair of that, on something to establish a roadmap for behavioral health. And what that means is in our healthcare system, we have boards that regulate the physicians or anesthesiologists or nurses or dentists or whatever. When it comes to mental health, we don't have an entity that really has come together, and I'm talking about public safety, judicial, you know, the court system involved with those that provide services, state hospital, and the physicians. And so we're looking to establish a group or a commission of people that we can balance people's needs, people's rights, their autonomy to make their own decisions with treatment for addictive services. And it's a very difficult subject. And so we're hoping to bring together more people involved with that.
Let's go back to the property tax freeze bill. I'm curious a little bit more about how it works. So let's say somebody's property tax was currently $2,500 a year. If it was frozen there, but of course, otherwise it would go up. How do you pay for all that?
So I can tell you what the intent is of the bill is and how things actually would get written. And so this is a House Joint Resolution, 201 is the House Joint Resolution, which would actually go to voters to vote on. So first of all, it's something that would go out to voters. We think it's very popular with voters. And the intent would be that if a senior that was on a fixed income could then qualify or apply to have their property tax not increase while they were still living in that house. And so if it does gain traction, then we'll work with the LFO to see what kind of dollar figures that might be. And then you know, to answer the question, how you pay for it. Part of the answer to that is you're just not charging them additional money, but you're not taking that property tax base away.
And other things that you're working on, looking ahead, or at least let's talk about things that maybe you're particularly interested in seeing happen or not happen.
So one of the ones that's kind of a niche item that I've been working on here, and this, you know, we're citizen legislators, so our, and when we come here, kind of our life experience, I think, ends us up in areas and legislation that we work on. My wife and I have had the opportunity to be involved in and raise 7 children, some of those biologically and adoption stepchildren. But also we've raised a couple children that were wards of the court. And so one of the ones that I'm working on, chief sponsor on with others, is House Bill 4120. And from that experience, I know it's difficult for foster children, which basically are wards of the court that go into a foster care system. The children my wife and I were able to help raise long term, were able to keep out of the foster care system, but transitional services for them once they turn 18 really aren't robust enough to help these children go from, okay, so you're in a foster care system where you have health insurance and then you turn 18. I've been working on this, and we now have the ability, if they qualify, to extend health insurance for them to 26, just like my other children under my insurance would be qualified for. But they don't have very good transition services to get into the workforce or to get into housing. And so this is a large, complicated issue that we're working on that Kenny Geyer and others, Sarah Gelser and I have worked on last session. We've reduced the request this time. And so those types of issues that, you know, we just know are out there that we feel like we as a state have a responsibility to do a better job. We work on some of those issues.
Along with the cap and trade legislation, what are some of the other big, more controversial things that look to be ahead in the next 32 days?
Well, that's probably the biggest controversial one. There is conversation, which interestingly is coming through healthcare, although I'm being told that there's negotiations on it when it comes to aerial spraying. There's some conversation about House Bill 4109, whether it would be a ban on aerial spraying or there would be some more restrictions put around aerial spraying. So there may be some controversy in that. Another House Joint Resolution is whether health care is a right or not, because that would significantly change our health care system in Oregon rather than having, you know, our system of Medicaid, Medicare, private insurance, public employee insurance, ERISA plans, self-insured plans. If health care became a right, that would significantly change that. So there's that bill. And those are the things that are kind of in the scope that I'm working with.
Now, of course, we have continued to hear about the potential of a walkout by some GOP members, depending on what happens with cap and trade. What are you hearing?
At this point, I think that the leadership, both on the Senate and the House side, have left that option on the table, what they would rather do. And I think kind of the common thread on is if you are going to, when they're speaking to their counterparts, I'm not in the room when they do that, but if you're going to do a cap and trade legislation during a short session, it should be HJR or it should be a House Joint Resolution, meaning it gets referred to the voters. So if they're going to do a big policy change where they can post an amendment within an hour and actually run that on a Saturday or Sunday if they wanted to, that should go to voters. So that's what I think we're hoping for.
State Representative Cedric Hayden, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Thank you, sir.
1258 News Radio 1240 KQAN.
Been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by The Parent House. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.